You are listening to the Alpha Male Buddhist from Brooklyn podcast. Expand your mind and keep it love.
This is episode 133. This is an interview with MMA fighter Javier Trujillo. And that's J-A-V-I-E-R, and his last name is T-R-U-J-I-L-L-O. His fighting name is Honey Badger. So, the reason I'm doing this is the quality of this interview is not the greatest in that we were on Skype, and it kept dropping off Skype. It was not that clean. I ended up with a couple of segments that were overlapping. It was crazy. So I tried to piece it together as skillfully as I could. So I did get some good content out of it. If it's Javi, of course it's going to be good content. So yeah, that's Javier Trujillo. He's the MMA fighter. This is our second interview. Went very well. Like I said, the only thing is you're going to hear it kind of jump around slightly. There's going to be three specific jumps. I don't know if you're going to pick them up. I try to do it as smoothly as possible. So that's pretty much it right now. And he's also, like I said, Javier, support him. Right now he has just came off of a victory in Thailand where he won a championship over there in Thailand. Full Metal Dojo he's representing. Now he has something, in England or in London. He's got a bare knuckle fight coming up. And that's a big league. It's a big fight he has coming up here in December, right? So we're all wishing him the best. Wishing him a good victory, you know, and safe and everything like that. So, yeah, he's a great dude. So I apologize. At the end also of this episode, it cuts off. Right at the end, it just drops off. I didn't want to add to it or over-edit it or do anything like that. You know, Javi was, you know, putting his message out, a lot of what his thinking process is as far as fighting and life goes. He ended up getting into his, his Nietzsche views and Kierkegaard and such. It's pretty cool. So I like talking with him. The guy goes, he's a smart dude. He's a very smart dude. So, yeah, I want to thank everybody. And, I'm just going to put this on, the clip on, and then my exit on the other side. And I want to thank you for listening, and namaste. Bye. All right, I'll do the intro real quick. This is episode 133 of the Alpha Male Buddhist podcast. I have my distinguished guest on today, Javier Trujillo. He's a friend of the show, and he's a friend of mine. He's an MMA fighter out of right now England, and he's an inspiration. That's why I like to have him on the show, and I just always am grateful when he comes on, you know, and he's a cool dude. So, Javi, welcome to the show, man.
All right. Thank you, brother. Thanks for having me back on, man. Appreciate it.
Talk to us about your victory you just went through, November 30th, right?
Yeah, November 30th, fought for first the welterweight title. What's that?
First round.
First round finish under a minute with the submission. So, I mean, for me, that's highly technical. I think that's even more gratifying than a knockout, because with a knockout, you can always say there's this kind of like a fight, like a puncher's chance. But a submission, and why I always prefer grappling, is because there's no dispute on who won that match, you know?
So I never thought of it in that way. Wow. It's true.
Yeah. I mean, to me, that's why I've always felt that grappling is an extremely superior art, just because it's you're taking a man's will, you know, by the idea that I understand the art more, and I understand, you know, what it is that like jiu-jitsu and wrestling is about, you know. And to submit the guy with what they call a Von Flue choke is a very technical move. I mean, a lot of people would say that it's like a low class move, but it's very hard to hit in MMA, and for the fact that I hit it in, you know, less than a minute, I think like kind of displays how strong I am. You know?
Is that like a Darce?
Similar. So it was made by this guy, it was a counter to when guys would start guillotining people. You take them and you bring cross side of the body. What's happening is that when the guy holds onto your neck, his shoulder is now applying pressure on his own carotid. And then with my shoulder, I'm applying pressure to the other side of his carotid. So if he doesn't let go of the hold, he's essentially choking himself, is wow. How the choke works. Yeah.
Wow. That's technical shit.
Yeah, man. And so, I mean, I was happy because I really didn't – I like the guy, the opponent that I was fighting. He's a really nice guy, really well-liked in the Muay Thai community. And the fact that we both could walk away, you know, nice and safe and all right, you know, was also a good feeling, you know.
That's one thing I love about the jiu-jitsu aspect of it, or the grappling aspect, is the fact that you can go at it really 100%, man, pretty much 100%, and with the jiu-jitsu side of it, you know what I mean? And express yourself in that way and grow that way and get all the benefit out of it, you know, as opposed to the striking where it's a little bit more, you know, it's a little, there's more that you have to pay, you know what I mean?
Yeah, there's a little bit more consequences for you to learn in order to get better, you know, and that's sometimes your health. If you have a good coach and you have a good team, you know, hopefully you don't take too much damage when you're striking, but that's kind of more of the exception than the norm. So, I mean, that's what I like about jiu-jitsu is that you can go full bore and not hurt each other, you know?
Right. That's, yeah. And it's fun, basically.
Yeah, super fun. I mean, it's like it's the art of human chess, you know? It's like the greatest video game. It's the game of death, man.
but in real life. Yeah. So now I read on Instagram you're getting ready for another fight or a bare knuckle fight, or what's happening?
Yeah, so I'm going to be fighting for this organization called the Bare Knuckle Boxing. And it's the number one promotion, I think, in the world, actually. I think they pay the highest purses. They're trying to build a roster full of guys and try and keep them. And they had a last-minute pullout, or I guess, well, it's about 5 weeks out, but they had a pullout against their middleweight champion, this guy named Rob Boardman. So the promoter was looking online for guys that was there. Fortunately, I already came back to England, and I just basically put my hand up and said, hey, I'm here, man, if you need somebody. You know, I just won the championship and just did some social media posts trying to campaign for it. Got a lot of traction, and the promoter noticed. And so he said, well, do you want to take this fight? And I said, absolutely. You know.
Now, Javi, can I ask you, for myself and for the listeners, bare knuckle is different because if you strike in the wrong position, like with the small part of your hand, your pinky knuckle or whatever, you can really break your hand, right?
Yes, exactly. You know, so
explain that to us.
Yeah, because you're not wearing gloves. So, I mean, in the last like few weeks, I mean, I've been afar looking at bare knuckle boxing and being very interested in it, because I kind of when I watched the first fight versus Artem Lobov and this guy named Chris Knight, both former UFC fighters, when they had a bare knuckle boxing fight. And I'd watch that, I'd got the same feeling from when I first started watching UFC. You know, it just seems very raw, very gritty.
Right.
And just something about it kind of like rose up in my, like that adrenaline feeling in the back of my you know, the back of my mind, you know. And what the difference is actually, it's like the first style of prize fighting that most in history, everybody has fought, you know. And you can't wind up on punches, and you can't throw as hard as you do in, like, let's say the MMA or boxing or kickboxing or Muay Thai, because your hands aren't wrapped, you know, they're not taping over the knuckles. So yeah, you have to be very you have to pick your shots a little bit better. You have to be a little more I would say a little more strategic in the way you try and plan setups and combinations that you just can't do in a normal boxing setting or a normal kickboxing or Muay Thai setting, just because the gloves definitely do change the combinations and the style and the aggressiveness that you have to put. But to me, the fascination of it is just that I'm kind of in search, like I've said the last time, I'm in search for the realest thing out there, you know?
Right.
And if we kind of take away the gloves and you take away all this and that, it's like how would it really be, you know? And that's what I'm always in search for. I mean, granted, it's in the way of sport, but trying to get as close to, if it's just me and a man on a street, what would happen? And that's where I want to test my mettle, you know?
That's the one thing about the MMA that I've always said, whether it's boxing or whatever, but it's the purest sport in the sense of there's no excuses. You know what I mean? It's like you put in your 100%, And then the result is there. You know what I mean? Whether you win or lose or whatever the case may be. And it's like you don't get that really in any other sport. Not to the same degree. It's very individual driven.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. You know, and there's just so many ways to win in MMA. But like I said, like the thing about this, the bare knuckle boxing is just that, like, it resonates with something very old, you know, that's how all the prize fighters have been fighting for years back in the 1900s, going way back.
Jack Johnson,
you know, I've just been reading up about this guy named Brian Mendoza, who fought in the 1700s. I was actually like kind of mimicking his stance all week. Just because it made a lot more sense, a very more squared stance. So you have equal power in both hands. And that way, you know, when you stand like that, you can't wind up on a punch like you would in a traditional boxing stance. Thus, you can help break your hand. Okay. So like for me, what's kind of fun, and particularly being a mixed martial artist, is that, yeah, this is the goal as a mixed martial artist. You should be able and to compete in every style of combat form. You know, having 13 years of experience in boxing, Muay Thai, kickboxing, jiu-jitsu, and wrestling, I shouldn't be afraid to step into anybody else's arena, you know, and I think this is just another test of it.
Yeah, I mean, it's striking. Basically, it's striking.
Yeah, you sound quick.
Yeah, you're very good. So you were explaining about the guy called you, you know, what is the date for this bare knuckles?
It's going to be January 25th, so about 5 weeks out from now. The challenge him for the middleweight title as well. So, but when I'm thinking of the organization in that as well, you know, man. So, I mean, it's. I mean, I'm already probably counted as the underdog in this fight, but if I win, I win big. If not, then, you know, I got my in the bare knuckle boxing promotion.
I've lived my life that way. What you just said, like, you know, like we, like Puerto Ricans say, I don't know if you heard the term before, meta mano, get your hands in. But yeah, for us, it's a very weighted statement, you know, phrase, meta mano. Your attitude is great. It's like, you, I'm getting in, fuck it, it's gonna, o lo rompo o lo arreglo. You heard that one before? Either I break it or I fix it. But you're just jumping in, and you gotta love that shit, man, you know? And it's true. I mean, if you win and you do great, it's like, yo, I got it. If not, hey, this is part of your path to whatever that you're doing. Like you said, being the most complete and thorough, you know, warrior that you could be, you know?
Yeah, man. I mean, that's why I wanted to take on, and not just saying that I'm a professional mixed martial artist. I want to say that I'm a prize fighter. I'm willing to compete in any style, any form. You know, if the prize is right, whether it be money or a title or just, you know, a recognition that, hey, man, this Javier Trujillo guy, he's a hard motherfucker and he's willing to do things that no one's willing to do. And I've been like that my entire life, you know. So
where can the listeners watch the your last fight? Is that going to be and the new one coming up? Where can we see you work at?
So the last fight that I had fought on, you can find that available on their Facebook page at Full Metal Dojo right now. You'll find the live stream link. And then they're still editing and cutting down all of it until to make it into fights. So that hasn't uploaded quite yet. But if you want to see the whole show from beginning to end, you just click on their Full Metal Dojo link on their Facebook page. And if you click like, they'll give you updates every time that they're going to be having new fights. I believe in March, they're talking about getting me on that card as well, but it's going to be just Muay Thai, but in MMA gloves.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Elbows and knees allowed?
Elbows, knees, and allowed, just like Muay Thai, but it's in a cage and it's in with MMA gloves on.
That sounds real interesting.
Yeah, man. I mean, it's a cool organization, man. I really think they're very forward-thinking. I'm excited and I'm happy that I'm like the face of their organization as like their biggest star. But I think what they're trying to do and how they make fights and how creative they get with the promotion itself, I think it's awesome, man. I'm just happy to be a part of it. You know, real life kumite.
What is that kumite? What, I've heard that before.
You remember the movie Bloodsport with Jean-Claude Van Damme?
Okay. I wasn't a huge Van Damme guy, but I do remember Bloodsport.
Exactly.
So, yeah, they're on this thing. They got the 70s vibe on the advertising and the whole, I was kind of checking the Starsky and Hutch kind of on the banners. You know, it was kind of cool. And I see you up in there, you know, it's kind of cool.
Yeah, man. I mean, the guy, John Nett, the head owner of the organization, he he went to Thailand, was fighting as well in Muay Thai, and then slowly worked his way up to becoming a promoter of a underground MMA league and bringing MMA to Thailand, which is incredibly hard because, you know, the Muay Thai is deeply embedded in the culture, and anything that's an outside threat to it usually gets shut down. And you know, from making deals and doing this and that, he finally got it to become legal in Thailand.
Wow. And how was he able to do? I'm sure in Thailand, I'm sure you gotta pay the right people. You know, I know what operates over there.
Know the right palms or know the right people in order to get something like that done. Otherwise, there's no way that a show like that would ever happen.
Percentages and stuff like that. Excellent, yeah. Excellent. So now, tell us about, like I said, so tell us about how they can watch the new your new fight coming up, which is also a championship fight, title fight. Tell us about that, how we could watch that, or how that's going down.
On Fight TV, I think it's by pay-per-view. And, yeah, you guys can watch it there on live stream, or I believe you can get it on cable television as well. And that'll be January 25th. We'll be fighting this guy named Rob Boardman. I believe he's like a pikey or whatever they call him, like these kind of wandering type things.
Oh, the gypsies.
Yeah, yeah, I think he's one of those
tough dudes.
Yeah, he is a tough dude. But hey, man, I mean, that's the thing is, I feel, looking at his fights, he fought a lot of guys that are purest boxers, you know, and they even said for this organization that their top guys are all MMA guys, and I think it's just we're all used to fighting with the small gloves. Right. So for me, it's not that much different than MMA. The only thing I'm kind of excited about is I finally get to let my hands loose because I'm always constantly worried about the takedown, and this guy ain't going to take me down. So it's like, you know, I can finally get creative with my hand, you know?
Interesting. Yeah. Because with the MMA, it's the striking in MMA is obviously different because of the takedown.
Yeah. Yeah. It's different because of the takedown. It's different because of the gloves. Like, a big hole that I saw right away with a lot of MMA guys when they try and just block with both hands like this is that the small gloves get through. You don't have that big wall of protection like you do with 14-ounce gloves or 12-ounce gloves. So it completely changes the way you block, completely changes the way you set up stuff, how you throw punches, because you have access to this person at a bunch of weird angles that you wouldn't normally have if you were wearing normal boxing gloves, you know?
Cool, cool. So, So I remember, you know, I guess it was the day after your fight, I went on Instagram and there was some pictures of you with your samurai sword that you won and everything like that. Tell us a little bit about that experience, about, you know, the beginning of the fight, your opponent, and that whole process, your whole mental process.
Yeah, man. I mean, like, I was just thinking about when you were asking me the last time, when we just had that chat about before the one that we didn't record, and I started thinking about as I was going through my motions, you know, going through in the basement, is like this is my art, man. This is like what I do, you know. Like I treat the day of the fight like I would a Tuesday afternoon at sparring. You know, I was just in the basement warming up, you know, going through my routines, and then as the fight starts to get closer and closer, you know, you hear the next guy go up, you hear the crowd all screaming, you hear the music going loud, and we're in the bottom of this basement. And how the FMD has it set up, it's raw, man. Like I said, it's the realest thing I had ever been a part of. The guy that I'm fighting against, this guy named Daniel Kerr, 135 Muay Thai fights, has fought the best of the best in the world, wants to take a crack at MMA again. And he's over there kicking pads, looking fluid, moving nice. I'm over in my corner just doing my thing, working with my boys. And then every fight, with the exception of one, all ended within like the first or second round. So the fight, the night was going quick. And I just remember I made that last like calm movement. You know, I go through my head. You know, what's mostly important, and I think it's not just for fighting, but it's just for life, is just your self-talk. And I mean by self-talk is just that mental talk you're constantly going in your head, you know, and then how you view yourself and how you view everything. And I always say the same thing. It's just that I'm the greatest fighter in the world. Nobody can beat me. You know, I work harder than anybody in this world. There's nothing I got this, you know, and as long as I go out and do what I do, I'm going to come out victorious. And I just constantly keep saying that in the back of my head. Of course, you'll feel the negative chatter want to build up, But you just keep repeating it to yourself. And every time I feel like the negative chatter builds up in my head, I just remember motion releases tension. So I just go warm up with one of my buddies, hit some pads again, and constantly just reinforcing that positive statement in my mind. And so once they call us up, they call him up first, and then you walk up these like Benji stairs, man. It's like a dark little basement. And they call him up and they go up, and then I'm waiting for my entrance. And, you know, Bangkok's my town, dude. I mean, I started there, you know, 3 years, and now I built up a big community and a big following there. And as I was waiting, I just said one last prayer, you know, just like, you know, just to watch over me, watch over my opponent, and, you know, let me be victorious, you know. And once that hit, they taught me to go outside and make my walk out. And just going through everything, dude, it's just like in my head, I just say the last thing is there's nowhere in the world I'd rather be, you know, than doing this. Like, for, I feel like as men in general, you know, we're growing from the moment we're, it's like that Cat Stevens song, you know, it's like the moment we're, we can talk, we're ordered to listen, you know, we're ordered to sit down in a chair, we're ordered to just to work, we're ordered to do this, we're ordered to do that. And for once in my life, once that cage closes, I'm free to express myself truly, you know, I'm free to be what I am and, you know, unapologetic. And there's nowhere else in the world I can do that. And there's nowhere else I'd rather be. So for a lot of guys, they dread that moment, but it's like, why, man? This is what you work for. I get a moment in life that any other man would wish they could do. Any man wish they could be in the arena, but they can't because they're afraid.
You know? There's like probably 10%, maybe less, maybe even 5% of the population are guys like you that they just enjoy fighting. You know, because I put a lot of thought to it, but you guys literally get enjoyment out of it. I don't enjoy fighting. You know, I like martial arts and training and that shit or whatever, but and knowing I can defend myself. But you guys literally, and not only enjoy fighting, but you like to test yourself against the next guy, see how good of you. You know what I mean? And that's, I think that's an inherent. Like, you know, I don't think there's any way you can become an MMA fighter or anything like that, or at a high level, and not really enjoy combat sport. Just enjoy it for the sake of the combat.
Yeah, man, of course. I think you got to kind of enjoy getting hit, and you got to enjoy taking hits, you know? You kind of got to like the pain a little bit. But, you know, I mean, that's why, like, I can – when I look at, like a fighting pit bull, or I look at, like, one of those fighting roosters, I get it, you know? I get the essence of that being. It's like, well, you're kind of genetically predispositioned to do this thing, you know? And so it's like – yeah, I just feel at home, man. That's my home, you know?
Yeah. It's, well, you know, it's like I said, for a while, I'll give you an example. The Nate Diaz versus Jorge Masvidal, the last one. I, my opinion, it was a little bit on the brutal side. You know, when he got split up and when Nate got split open and everything like that. And they're both game and they're both thrown down. But, like, I think that should have been stopped. I don't know, in my own opinion, immediately, when it's to that level, because at that point, you're really putting somebody's health at risk and their livelihood and the whole nine. You probably think differently. And then the other thing, I think when a guy's on the floor, I don't think you should be able to hit him if the back of his head is on the mat, because there's no, you know what I mean? He's like really taking a full shot. And again, you probably feel, you know, full soccer kicks should be allowed. But that's my opinion, you know what I mean? What's your view on some of the like the soccer kick?
Well, in FMD, the soccer kicks are allowed. You know, like I said, I think the less rules, the better. I mean, the more rules that you add to any sport, the more genetically predispositioned somebody will be better off. But then I think something like MMA, where it's just so dynamic, where there are a million patterns that you could use to win, it's no longer about like a genetic. And what I mean by that is, like, okay, if you're a basketball player, it helps out if you're six foot right. Seven. I'm not saying that it's the end all be all. Of course, there's always exceptions to the norm, but for majority of them, you have to be a certain weight, or you have to be a certain you know, length or lung capacity, or like, you know, right, have a certain size of hands like Michael Phelps for swimming.
But what does he have, like, he has some, like, I think he's genetically predisposed to be a really good swimmer the way he's set up.
Exactly, you know, and that's what I'm saying with a lot of different sports. As we're fighting, you can be any type of body type. There's not a certain look to a fighter. Every fighter is different. Mike Tyson is completely different than Muhammad Ali. Nate Diaz is completely different than Henry Cejudo. You know, that everybody comes in all shapes and sizes and forms, and there's so many different ways that an individual in a martial arts or a combat sport can express themselves. And for me, that's what I kind of find it, because it's no longer about your physicality or genetics. It's about how smart and clever you are, you know, and that's what I love about modern day MMA, is that there's no more hidden techniques. There's nothing. It's all out there. You know, a friend of mine, he explained it. He's like, well, we're back in the samurai era. You know, we're just right, like Shogun era. You know, it's not about the technique. It's about the strategy and the cleverness of the fighter, the combat athlete. And that's what I love.
Yeah, I can see you're really into the thinking side of it and the philosophical side of it. Because the first thing you texted or wrote me on Instagram was Book of Five Rings, bro. I'm like, yes. your mindset, you know, as you said too, you're the fifth ring, which is the void, you know, which is like my shit, you know, the void, because that's where everything is at, man. That's like, yeah, man.
It's funny, you know, I thought about you when I was, after the fight the next weekend, I had my friend who was a yoga instructor, and he, very good friend of him, but he came up with this idea with another buddy of ours called Digital Detox, where for a weekend, you have to give your phone and you put it in a bag, and you're just going to have to interact with people like you would normally. And it was really interesting because it was also done at this retreat in a town called Rayong, which is about an hour and a half outside Bangkok. This guy who runs the retreat has the largest library of books in all of Asia, I think, wow, or something like Southeast Asia, at least. Wow. Old school books, new school books, all sorts of stuff. The guy's also a martial artist himself, but they're in every guest room. And in my room, he had the Tao of Te Ching. As I was flipping through the book, that quote that you told me came up.
Oh, 30 spokes connect at one hub. What is not there? Are you 11? That was number 11.
Yeah, yeah.
Great.
Yeah. That was the first thing that came up, man. I was like, oh, shit.
That's interesting.
Yeah, man. But yeah, that's the void, you know. That's that fifth ring. And that's, like I said, the training and everything, like I said, the fight is more physical the farther the way you are. The closer you get to it, it becomes all mental. And then that once the cage closes, or once you hop into that ring, then it's the void. There's no more thinking. There's no more nothing. It's just expressing whether you win or lose. That's it. You know, like in the Bhagavad Gita, it's like, well, you're not entitled to the fruits of your labor. You're only entitled to your labor, you know, and that's what it is. Once you enter in there, it's going to be what it's going to be. The gods are going to fare in your advantage or not. But all that's mine is all the work, all the process. That's all I can say is mine. Whether I get a belt, whether I get my hand raised, That's right. It doesn't matter.
See, I totally agree with, because I see a lot of people, they get hung up on, you see it on Instagram, you know, forget the billions, I want trillions, you know, the bigger car. And to me, you're getting it all wrong in the sense of it's the experience, man. It's being here and it's, you know, just rolling in the mud or doing whatever, you know, getting in a cage or whatever your passion is doing that. And a lot of people get hung up in that. Let's say they might do some MMA and they lose their first fight, or they lose their first three fights. And it's like, you know, if you lose them 10 in a row, that's a different story. But, I mean, they give up too easily, man. And I think one of the main things that you're going to get from any discipline that you do is just participating in it, getting involved with it, meeting that resistance, meeting that challenge. You know, that whole Pressfield thing, I know we were talking about Pressfield, you like him a lot. You read some really interesting books, man.
Oh, yeah, thank you, man.
You do, because you're bringing up Joseph Campbell, and you're bringing up, you know. Have you been getting into the Nietzsche a little bit lately?
Actually, you know what, I've kind of, went back to that this last month, man. That and Kierkegaard, I've been really getting back into. There's actually it's not a book, but it's a talk series. It's a lecture series on existentialism. It's called, gosh dang it, what is it called now? It'll come to me in a second.
Yeah, whenever you try to remember some shit, it always goes away. Whenever you try to remember it.
Yeah, man, of course.
But you were saying Kierkegaard.
Yeah, Kierkegaard. And I mean, because the concept of like why, like I kind of started drawing myself back to like kind of reading like the Bible and a lot of like these older religious books, and why he decided to kind of go back to Christianity himself, because like I think with like existentialism and nihilism, like that's what like Nietzsche was saying, was like, okay, now that science is kind of taking the forefront of what God used to be for us, now we're going to be entering into a void of basically a nihilism where, you know, nobody will feel like they have a point in life. And so what Nietzsche was trying to do with the Übermensch and this and that is like, okay, well, if all the barriers of our culture are being torn down, then that means as the individual, we have to build our own stakes of morality. We have to build our own identity, and we have to find our own purpose in life. But unfortunately, I think like for a majority of people, that's extremely difficult. And what happens is because that task is so high, I mean, that's why he called them the Übermensch, because you have to be a superhuman right. to tackle this task. You know, and for most people, what happens is that they delve into nihilism. They think, well, if there is no meaning to life and there is no point and nobody belongs here on purpose and no, you know, I mean, yeah, you ever watch this cartoon called Rick and Morty?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Man, and I mean, there's one quote. I mean, it's a nihilist quote. It's like nobody exists here on purpose. Nobody belongs everywhere, and everyone's gonna die. Now let's go watch TV.
Hold on, we have a bad connection. Hold, can you see me? Hold on.
Yeah, I can see you. Okay. You're frozen.
Yeah, I gotta just find the file because it creates a file. You mess with Skype or not really?
Not really, no. Once you hit stop, it said stop recording.
I just did it now. I put recording. You should see the red dot.
I can see now.
Yeah, so you were talking about Kierkegaard and how nihilism and how people go into a dark path because of that mindset in the way of thinking. I find it to be really interesting because my feeling also is that you need to learn all of these disciplines as much as possible. And you not use the one that's appropriate for the given situation, but you need to know a little bit about all of that stuff. But tell us about, you know, you were getting into a Nietzsche and Kierkegaard. I interrupted.
Yeah. I mean, like that's what I was saying is that like, that's what nihilism is. And I think honestly, that's why like people who aren't that observant or just kind of, you know, grow up and they're brought up in whatever religion or they're brought up in whatever town and they just kind of do their thing, you know, they tend to be a little bit more happy because they're not conscious about all these different things. And I think for like just people as a majority, I think that's why there's a lot of depression and this and that, because the postmodernist era, which is just like the culture zeitgeist, is all kind of going through this very nihilistic point of view. So it's like, that's why everybody wants to create their own gender. Or, I mean, there's people that want to be aliens now, you know,
right.
Because they're trying to express that. But then it's just like, for me, I just never wanted to be in what Nietzsche called or Kierkegaard called bad faith, which is, I just don't want to come to my existence and say, when somebody says, well, why do you believe in God? Or why do you believe in this? And just say, I don't know. It's just the way I was brought up, or it was always that way. I want to have an explanation. I want to have a reason. And that way, if I do choose to follow something or I do choose to believe in something, it's because I chose it for my own individual, basically my own individual beliefs. And I carry that through the void of the universe, whether it is indifferent to me or not. You know?
People don't have any clue, really. I think a lot of people don't have a clue on the weight of that word choice. I mean, it's a hell of a word, man. You know, the choices that you make in life, what you choose to do, what you choose not to do, you know what I mean? And that's why it's so important, really, to read and to, you know, stimulate yourself with different types of thinking and different types of thought patterns and how other people did, but like the Japanese way of thinking, like, I don't know, before we were talking about the Book of Five Rings, but there was the other book, the Hagakure. I was talking about the movie Ghost Dog.
Yeah.
You really need to check out Ghost Dog. I'm going to try to find the link and send it to you.
I think I'm going to watch it after I get off with you tonight, dude. I'm going to go find it.
But I'm just saying, though, just keep it in your head because I'm sure you'll come across a Ghost Dog. But the point is, like, he was into the whole Bushido, into the whole samurai culture, applied it. He was working for some mafioso dude, you know, in the 70s or whatever. This is the movie. It's not a true life movie, but it was a novel, Ghost Dog. But that discipline with just when you have that in your disposal, that Eastern way of thinking, or maybe that Nietzsche way of thinking, or the Aristotle kind of point of view, it's so important to be able to have these different type of things. I think you appreciate life a lot in a much deeper level when you have that kind of framework to view things from. You know what I mean? Like, I notice people that are philosophically inclined, when they break it down to you, they kind of bring you through the levels of their whole thought process so that you have a real clear understanding of where they're coming from. Kind of like what you're doing just now. You were talking about Kierkegaard and Nietzsche. You know, I think it's important to be able to do that and explain yourself why you believe in certain types of things and why you make the choices that you make. It's so important. That's why I really like having you on the show, because you kind of cut the chase on a lot of shit. You get right to it. So, yeah, man, what other readings stimulate you?
I mean, just for the fact that's what I've been getting on as of lately, just with like the Kierkegaard and all them, but also during this fight camp, I listened to this book again. It's one, for some reason, about 2 weeks before this last fight, I call it the fear, you know, a real, real, real big fear, and it usually hits me at night. So I remembered it was probably like my a week and a half since I came back to Thailand training with my boys at Team Quest, you know, and I felt good, you know, I was a little bit tired, jet lagged. I didn't have the best sparring day that day, and I just felt like nothing was kind of going my way, and I remember I laid down that night, and then all of a sudden the fear, all the doubt came in, all of the voices in your head that are saying, you know, you're going to lose, you know, what if you lose in front of everybody, what if this happens, you know, you're going to go back home, you're going to go back home as a failure, you're going to go back, you know, all these, the negative voice was just kind of going in my head, and it kept me up. And not only just the ego, but then the body started getting afraid. It's like, well, what if you get kicked? What if what if you get head kicked? You know, the guy's most dangerous weapon was he's really good at throwing wheel kicks and axe kicks and all these really unorthodox, like Taekwondo, traditional martial arts style, which are really deadly. If I stay in that range, you know, and he hits me, that's a hard kick, you know, kick to the body or kick to the head you're going to take. And just, you know, you could possibly die. All those things come into my head. You know, and I couldn't sleep. You know, I was up all night, and I remember
the night before the fight. I'm sorry, the night before the fight. This was
this is about 2 weeks out.
Okay, I'm sorry. Two weeks out. Okay.
Yeah. It was about 2 weeks out before the fight, and I just got extremely nervous, man. And like you said, you know, you said like what books you read. Books to me. Somebody explained it's like having a room full of people as advisors, you know. If I have Nietzsche in the room, if I have Aristotle, if I have Seneca, if I have Lao Tzu, if I have, you know.
Marcus Aurelius, yeah.
Yeah, Marcus Aurelius, Miyamoto Musashi. I have all these in the room with me at all times. All I have to do is just grab a book. All I have to do is listen to an audio tape. And I can ask these guys for advice, because I feel when you're up like that and anxiety happens, is that you're trying to address a situation in your life or just a situation in your problem that needs immediate address. And if you can't be sleeping, you got to do something to alleviate that, you know. And one book that I've listened to since I was 19 years old, so what was that, 2009, is called The Way of Fight by Georges St-Pierre. And you don't even have to be a martial artist. I just think the way that this guy thinks in that book, and he basically embodies what I think it means to be a fighter, to be a martial artist. He has the balance of both the East and the West. He's very scientific in the way he thinks. And I found a lot of comfort in his words, you know, and how to progress. And just, I mean, there's just so many things in that book that I could just draw upon that I find very beneficial for anybody in life. That's one book
I saw highly. Something.
What's up?
Sorry to interrupt. I saw with GSP specifically on one of them video things on the UFC where he was having a panic attack or something like that, like prior to a fight. And I think he started seeing a fight psychologist. So kind of associated to what you're saying. And it turned him, and that was in the very beginning of his career. And he got into the fight psychology. It's like he said, he would get these moments of fear prior to a fight, just like you was stating. It's interesting. So did you realize that about him and that he wrote the book for that reason, or how did that happen?
That's, the GSP book. Growing up, like, I mean, as a fan, he was one of my favorite. I mean, we both fight in the same class. I mean, I always knew I was going to be a welterweight fighter. And so anybody that was in that weight class, I obviously admired. And I really took a shining to GSP just because I thought, man, this guy's the perfect athlete. Look at him. He can do takedowns. He can throw jabs very nicely. He throws all sorts of weird Kyokushin karate kicks. Like, this guy is the real deal. And when I had found out in his book how, because I felt like going into fights or when I was going into wrestling competitions, I was terrified. I was constantly terrified, and I thought, maybe there's something wrong with me. Maybe I'm not made to fight. Maybe I'm not made to do these things. If I'm so scared, look at all these dudes in the UFC or wherever. They don't look scared. They don't look like this. Am I in the wrong sport? And coming to find out, the greatest guy of all time, the dude that I wanted to idolize, he's like, I'm terrified. I'm absolutely terrified.
Wow. You know?
And I found comfort in that, knowing that the greatest fighter, considered probably the greatest fighter in mixed martial arts history, is absolutely terrified, you know? And what does he do to get over those fears? And he said that he trained. Most fights are won in the dojo. They're never won in the ring. That was the first thing I had learned. You know, that he tested his mettle fighting everybody in Canada, fighting all the best of the best guys in the dojo. And once he got over that, he got to a certain the coach even explained it in the book. He's like, I wanted George to be around real professional fighters as he was coming up. I wanted him to feel the energy, the aura that these guys gave, a sense of danger, a sense of once you become a fighter, you have this presence of power around you. And I wanted him to feel that. And as he started to fight with these guys and they slowly started to lose that aura, he started to break down his fear and he started to see it in himself.
Yeah, GSP is a tremendous man, mentally, physically, spiritually. You know, even when he would come out to fight, he had the whole, you know, the whole Japanese with that wrap around the head and the whole, you know, the whole, I don't know what style karate that is, but when GSP would come in, he had that whole, you know, the headband with the Japanese writing. He takes it real seriously, man, GSP. You know,
he's not a fighter and he's not an athlete. Like a lot of people say, like they build him up as the greatest athlete all the time. If you were to put him on a track, he'd be average. You put him on weightlifting, he's an average athlete. There's nothing really special about him. Of course, they have to build all that stuff up because, you know, it's promotional work. You have to. But if you really look at him and you look at his story, he was bullied as a kid. He was sickly as a kid. You know, he wanted to do this thing. He felt inspired. And when he talks about the inspiration that he felt, it's the same feeling that I get or the same feeling anybody who gravitates towards whatever it is that they're inspired to feel. And he, regardless of the fear, he kept coming and showing up every day. And as he got better at his skills, then he started taking fights. And as he started building that, you know, he slowly, slowly started to become what he is now, which is George St. Pierre. You know? And it is a beautiful journey of going through his mind and going through his process. And I mean, just his day to day, you know, he says the greatest guys' lives are ruled by routine and mundane routine. You think it'd be a boring day. You know, he explains it up. I wake up in the morning. The first thing I do is I ask where do I got to go and who do I got to meet. Once I got that, I grab my bag that's right next to the door. Because if I don't have to pack my bag the day before, I'm wasting mental willpower. doing that. Every time you like packing your bag in the morning, you're wasting mental willpower. But if it's already done and I grab it next to the door, I still got willpower to go to the gym. I got my focus towards it. I get to the gym, I wrap my hands, you know. Once I get that, I start going through the motion. Whether that day it's we're training wrestling, jiu-jitsu, Muay Thai, boxing, strength and conditioning, sprinting. But then I start out going through the motion slow, and then we build up speed. And then I do that for an hour and a half. I go eat. Then I come back, take a nap, go back out, and train again. Once I get home, throw all my clothes in the wash, hang my stuff to dry, and I repeat the process. And it doesn't sound sexy. It's not the greatest life, but that's the life of a fighter. That's the life of any great artist. It's mostly life of a mundane routine, and to be a master of that.
So now the fact that you're training for just basically for the boxing,
yeah,
you kind of slow down on the jujitsu and the pad work and all that stuff like that, or how does, and the kicking, how does that work as far as your training goes right now?
So for me, knowing that it's just going to be boxing, I'm switching it more over to a boxing routine. Like this last week, once I knew I got the fight, like the other day, I was researching for 3 hours, watching every bare knuckle boxing fight that I possibly could, watching how the guys were training for it, the different techniques, and just trying to create a plan and a schedule. And then from there, I planned out, okay, I got 5 weeks. I need to do this, this, and this, and this every week, and this, this, and this. And then as I get closer until the day of the fight that I got circled in a big red thing on a calendar saying that this is the moment, you know. So for me, I'm going to have one day just – jiu-jitsu is fun for me, so I need one day to still kind of train and to kind of take my mind off of just boxing every day. But for the most of it's going to be boxing, man. Strength and conditioning, doing pad work, doing shadow boxing, doing footwork. And for me, I'm excited because I know this process, whether I win or lose, but I plan on winning. I always plan on winning. I never have that feeling that I'm going to lose. But all this training can just help me to become a better fighter. I know my striking is significantly going to get better for MMA. It's significantly going to get better for possibly taking an MMA or a Muay Thai fight or possibly taking a boxing fight in the future. Or I'm even in talks with talking about doing Lethwei. So, I mean, that'll definitely help me in Lethwei.
What is that Lethwei?
Oh, man, you don't know what Lethwei is?
No, I never heard of it.
He's kickboxing. But it's the same thing. There's no wraps on your hands. And they allow, it's just the same rules as Muay Thai. You can kick, you can knee, you can elbow, but you can also headbutt and slam.
Where's that from? Where's that from? What country?
So it's from Burma or Myanmar. So it's right next to Thailand, like kind of closer to Nepal and India.
Lethwei? It's called?
Yeah, Lethwei. I think it's Lethwei.
Yeah, I never heard of it. Wow, that's crazy stuff.
You gotta check it out. It's extreme. And if you get knocked out, you're given 2 minutes to recover.
Damn.
And if you continue, you can. It's a pretty nutty sport, but they're starting to pay big money for it. But I feel like if I want to see how well I fare in this bare knuckle boxing, and if I do well in that, it's like, well, I can definitely.
Welcome to the Alpha Male Buddhist from Brooklyn podcast. I'm your host, Miguel. I like to cover topics from ancient history, great leaders and generals from the past, and I also like to talk about self-realization, truth, critical thinking, and strategic spirituality. Outside the box, nonconformist. I'm here to shatter the myths of the mainstream media and the beta sheeple narrative. My email address is alphamalebuddhist@gmail.com. My website is alphamalebuddhist.podbean.com. My Instagram is alphamalebuddhist. And check out my YouTube channel, Alpha Male Buddhist, and that's on YouTube. It is the podcast accompanied with video clips
that integrate exactly with the podcast, so it's motivational and inspirational. I also have promotional t-shirts. If you go to my website, alphamalebuddhist.podbean.com, you can see the promotional t-shirts there. Reach out to me. Also, if you have any show notes or any suggestions that you would like to hear on the podcast, just reach out and see if I can get that done. I've been getting some really great emails and feedback from my listeners, which is great. So I want to thank you for listening, and namaste.